this journey, if we allow all our feelings and just learn how to just show up for ourselves, just show up for others, we can eliminate grief, because sometimes that is the price of living and loving. But we can eliminate the excessive and needless suffering we create.
Cue music. Places, everybody, places. We're starting in 3, 2.
Welcome to the Autoimmune Hour, where we look at the rise of autoimmune disorders. I've brought together top experts that range from doctors, specialists, nutritionists, researchers, and even those recovering from autoimmune to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information about autoimmunity and how to live your life uninterrupted.
Thank you for joining us here on the Autoimmune Hour with Sharon Saylor. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune and Life Interrupted Radio. And we don't want you to worry about taking too many notes, so you can join the Autoimmune Hour's Courage Club, and we'll send you the transcripts and show notes from every episode. Sign up now at understandingautoimmune.com. Now, back to your host, Sharon Saylor.
Welcome, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And as always, it's just my honor and pleasure to be with you here and bring you a brand new episode. We're going to talk about a topic that is not just for autoimmune, not just for chronic illness and recovery, but I think it's a really important topic to talk about because it can affect us in so many ways. So tonight I've invited Yvonne Heath on, and she is an expert in how do we talk about grief and things that happen to us and or to other people. She's also an expert in not just talking about it, but, you know, how do we deal with ourselves when we're in that uncomfortable place of our own grief or somebody else's grief. Let me give you her little bio here really quick. Since 1988, she was a registered nurse and has worked in many areas of hospitals, including emergency, intensive care, chemotherapy, and hospice. And during that time, she became very disheartened about society's reluctance to talk about and plan for and deal with grief. And she saw all this excess of suffering that was going on at the end of life and suffering for everybody that she knew it had to be done differently. So she took that leap of faith and stepped into showing us all how can we do it differently. And her amazing book, Love Your Life to Death, she's also a TV and radio host and been featured on many podcasts and other media. And she has a wonderful TED Talk out, Transforming Grief Just by Showing Up. So welcome, Yvonne. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much, Sharon. It's truly an honor to be here with you.
Now, this is a topic that can make a lot of people squeamish. I find it interesting. You know, there's an old saying about public speaking and more people would rather, like, you know, I think, was it Jerry Seinfeld that said something about more people would rather be in the coffin than give the eulogy? But I think that's but I think that's true about talking about grief, too. When I first got sick, so many people, I knew they cared about me and stuff, but they just didn't know what to say. And it didn't matter to me.
Well, and it's funny because you're so right, first of all, about public speaking and grief. So for me, it was a double whammy because when I decided to write a book, and it's hilarious because I had no experience. I saw this pop up on Facebook because I was pacing in my house and saying, we need to do something differently. We don't know what to do with grief. And we certainly don't talk about end of life. And there's a pop up on Facebook, how to write a best-selling book. And I went, oh my gosh, that's it. I'm going to leave my 27-year nursing career and write a book. And I yelled to my husband, isn't that exciting, honey? And he was terrified, of course, because I had no idea how to write a book. And I went, I know, isn't it wonderful? But then I realized, I was told that if I wanted people to read my book, I'd have to be a speaker. And guess what, Sharon? I was one of those people that was terrified to public speak. So here I was with a topic that people run from, and I was terrified to public speak. So it was a bit of a shaky start, I have to tell you.
Well, I'm glad you took the leap of faith because your book is awesome. And what you talk about is critically important, whether it is end of life or just dealing with a chronic issue. I have numerous people I hear of in the community who say, you know, my friends no longer come over, or I'm housebound now and my friends are afraid to come over. And that's so sad to hear. It's really sad because it's so isolating when a time when having community around us can be so healing.
Well, and in a world of billions of people, there are many, many, many people suffering in silos of silence and isolation. And it breaks my heart because we can do better if we talk about grief before it arrives. And the truth is, two things, I think. Number one, women in particular have been, you know, we feel like we have a badge of honor if we can do it on our own and we do everything for everyone. So we're uncomfortable asking for help, actually, aren't we?
Absolutely.
We're so uncomfortable and we don't want to ask for help. And on the flip side, people feel like they have to fix it or they have to be a professional to be able to be a part of someone's journey. And the truth is, certainly in chronic illness, I know thousands of people who live with chronic illness, and you don't have to be a professional. Yes, you need professionals perhaps to be a part of that journey at times, but 24/7, you need your community, your family, your friends, your whoever, your neighbors, your coworkers to be a part of that journey. And it's incredibly satisfying to be able to be a part of that journey. We don't know what to do or say, so we avoid. And that's what I want to change for people.
I think that's really important that we be open to talking about the topic is the first place to start. So let's say we have just found out that someone near and dear to us has been diagnosed with something that is really scary.
Yes.
What do you suggest is the first place to start? I mean, I sometimes feel helpless myself, and I've been diagnosed with something that was really scary.
Absolutely. So. And Sharon, why should we be comfortable? Because we don't have the conversations before. We don't develop coping skills and strategies, and we don't know that the most important thing, as in my TED Talk, I also said, when we don't know what to do, we don't know what to say, it's awkward, it's uncomfortable, and we can't fix it, the magic answer always is, just show up. Just show up. So that can be a hug, text, email, call, sit silently, and allow our humanness, allow our messiness. We don't have to be together. We don't have to be strong for them. And here's a perfect example. And I'm laughing. It was a very serious situation, but I'm laughing at my own reaction. A friend of mine sent a message and said that his son died suddenly and he was in his 30s. And I was just absolutely distraught. And even, you know, when grief arrives in my life or in the lives of those I care about, it's still hard for me, right? Like this isn't easy. So I immediately said, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do or say. And I have my little, I just showed up bracelet to remind me, right? Just show up. And I just called, and there weren't any words. I was crying so hard that he's like, who is this? Because I was so distraught for him. And I just said, oh my gosh, my heart is broken for you. And I was just blurting and crying, and I was okay with that. You know, that's the whole point, right? Like to just call and say, I don't know what to say, but I'm here and my heart's broken too. My heart's broken for you. And I think that I tell people, just lead with your heart. Just lead with your heart. Don't try to think, is this the right thing to do? Should I call? Should I just show up? Just call. If they don't want to talk, they won't pick up the phone or the conversation will be short. But sometimes even just saying, I am so sad for you and your family, and I'm here. And if they say thank you and hang up, that still meant something. You still showed up for them. And it isn't easy. And I tell people, don't wait for it to be comfortable, because it is not comfortable. Just show up anyway.
Great advice. Now, a quick question that happened in my mind, though, sometimes I run into people that get stuck in their own brokenheartedness and their own grief when they're trying to comfort someone else. And they're not picking up the cues that the person's trying to hang up or the person is trying to escape the room. Any suggestions that you've noticed that people, some cues that some people sometimes miss when they're like, it's not about you?
Right over. So first of all, such an important topic. I always say to people, can you please not answer someone's story with your story? Please don't do that. and again, let's talk about this before. When somebody says, I was just diagnosed with cancer and I'm terrified, the answer isn't, oh my God, my aunt was diagnosed with that and it was such a hard journey. And like people get into, I still don't quite understand why people do that. So I encourage people, don't answer the story with your story. Just listen. Say, oh my goodness, tell me more. What is this like for you? Just listen. But the other piece on the other side, if you're the person and someone is telling, I used to tell chemo patients all the time, my chemotherapy patients, I'd say, I'm going to tell you something. People are going to tell their stories. And they're half the time, they're going to be awful stories. And you know what? You have to be okay with having your boundaries, because when you are diagnosed with when you're struggling with something, your health and your self-preservation needs to be your number one priority. So I just kind of say to people, you just kind of put your hand up. Sorry, I need to interrupt. Can I ask you a question? Is this a positive story with a positive ending? Because if it's not, I'm not interested in hearing. Or, sorry, can you do me a favor? I just need you to listen to my story. I just need you to nod. I need you, a tear would be nice. A hug. I tell people to tell people what you need. Tell people, I know they should get it. I know you've hinted. I know you've looked at your watch and they're still talking. Just be honest. When you're dealing with something, your own health is your number one priority. And if their feelings are hurt, they'll be okay. And they should understand. So just be honest.
I was thinking about the time through my pregnancies when also there again, you hear every good, bad, and not an irrelevant story possible about everybody's else's pregnancy. Same type of situation.
Yes. I don't get it. I really don't. Why we have this need to connect, but people tell horrible stories. I was pregnant with twins and somebody said, oh my goodness, my friend was pregnant with twins and she was on bed rest for 9 months and her legs blew up like elephants. Like, why would I want to hear that story? It's like a terrible story. I don't know what that is, but we have to just say, I just need to hear positive stories right now, or I just need to tell you my story. I just need you to listen. We need to be better at just saying what we need.
That's a skill. That is a real developed skill.
Absolutely.
To work on it. And that's also known as setting boundaries, everyone.
Yeah.
And oftentimes when you're going through the diagnosis, you may not know what you need. So what are some ways you found, you counseled people to say, well, like, instead of saying, I need only positive stories, maybe I'm at that point where I'm just in that state of shock and I don't know what I need. I know it's not what's happening right now.
Yeah. Part of that also, and I say, if you're in the inner circle, because when you're grieving, that's the other thing, right? When you're grieving, and you're grieving, I mean, again, grief is whatever makes your heart ache, and certainly having a diagnosis changes your life in that moment when you hear those words. So there's a lot of grief in that. And for that person, I say, you take it 1 minute at a time, and it's okay to not know what you need, but just stick to the basics of remember, eat, sleep, drink water, and take care of yourself. And then I tell the circle, okay, they don't know what they need. However, no matter if you have a diagnosis, the rest of life goes on, doesn't it? Mm-hmm. Right? The rest of life goes on. So if you are that circle who wants to just show up for that person, it's like, okay, Sharon doesn't know what she needs, but I know she hasn't put her garbage out for a week and the lawn's a disaster and, you know, grandkids need to be picked. Something, let's think of the things that might be meaningful for her and do those things for her. I mean, you don't even have to ask. Like in my father-in-law, and I love this because he can be a little crusty, but he has a good heart. It's just in a, you know, crusty exterior. Across the street, his good friends, their 30-year-old son died suddenly. And of course, there's nothing, right? There's nothing you can do to repair that kind of grief. And you just need to be supportive. So they went away overnight. And he knew that they used to care about their grass. Obviously, that was the least of their worries at the moment. So he cut the grass. And they came home to their grass cut. You know, so I tell people, when you're grieving, when you're in a crisis, you sometimes you can't even think of what you need. Just anticipate the needs around. Just anticipate them. Do the best you can, right? Do the best you can.
Great advice. And I also want to point out that during this time, during the diagnosis, yes, I was profoundly shocked, having trouble kind of taking it all in for sure. And there was grief going on. And I also had to acknowledge in some ways, probably I didn't do it the best or the smoothest, but other people in my world were also grieving for the situation, for me, for what it meant to them, a whole variety of things grieving. And how do you counsel the person who's got the diagnosis that it's not your job to fix those people's grief?
Right. Well, and again, it's like, to me, there's like a circle. Here's the person who has the diagnosis, right? And I mean, they are in acute grief, and then you have the circle around them who want to help, but they're also grieving because suddenly mom or grandma or wife or whoever, sister, has their world has changed, so has yours. And then there's another circle of maybe there's support out there. So I tell people, reach out to the people, like the outer circle can reach out to counselors and ask for help. Like, say, I want to support this person, but I'm grieving also. Reach out to a counselor, reach out to somebody who has been through it. Reach out so that we should never try to do it alone, right? Like there's no having to do it alone. And that person, again, we often feel like, okay, I have to fix it for everyone else. I think that that supportive circle, the best they can do is reach out for other help so that that person doesn't feel like, okay, I'm going through this and I also have to make them feel better. But I think the other thing is we don't have to be strong for each other. I think we have to grieve together. I think that's part of it. Like a lot of people think, oh my gosh, I have to be strong so that they're not suffering because I'm going through this. Let's just all grieve together. And I that is one of the things that I witnessed in the chemotherapy clinic that truly was one of the catapults for me writing my book, because I would see this family over here with someone who was often younger than me. And that's when I really started to suffer, right? A lot of the patients were younger than me who were dying. And I would see this family over here, and there were kids, and there were parents, and there was a spouse, and they were all crying together, and they were all laughing together, and they were angry, and they allowed all emotion, and they lived fully till the end of that person's life with all of the emotion. And then over here, you saw bitterness and anger and everyone trying to solve this unsolvable situation. And you could just feel the tension and the angst, and the person died in anger and the family stayed stuck in grief. And I really think that that is something that we also, allowing our humanness as someone with a diagnosis and the supportive circle, let's all just cry together. Let's all just be sad together and help each other heal and reach out for other support. Did I answer the question or did I ramble on? I get very passionate and then I'm like off on a tangent.
Well, absolutely answered the question. And we need to take a quick commercial break. And when we come back, we'll learn more about this topic, because I think it's really important, and not just for end of life, as you've heard, because oftentimes with diagnosis, there's a lot of emotion and a lot of life change. So we'll be right back.
Life Interrupted Radio will return after these messages from our sponsors. It's great sponsors like these that keep this show coming to you every week. Be sure and stop by lifeinterruptedradio.com to learn more.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Visit StopTextStopWrecks.org, a message brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, Project Yellow Light, Noise, and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Sharon, and of course you know me from here on the Autoimmune Hour. Maybe you don't know I'm also an author. My latest book is for kids. It's Pinky Chenille and the Rainbow Hunters, a winner of a 5-star reader's favorite review. It's perfect for your early reader and a great bedtime story for your young adventurers. Check it out over at pinkychenille.com. That's PinkyChenille.com. See you there. Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're here with Yvonne Heath, the author of the groundbreaking book, Love Yourself to Death. Now, when I first got the book and I saw the topic, I didn't...
You can love yourself to death, but Leah, love your life to death.
Love your life to death. Okay. That was Yvonne chiming in there to tell me it's love your life to death. And when I first got the book, I was a little like, what's this topic about? Because the title was like, wow, I could go so many places with that title. But it's all about transforming grief and living your best life as you go through the process of, you know, all the different ups and downs of your life. And we've been talking about what is grief, how do we deal with it? And I really appreciated when you said this idea of just showing up. I think that's really important for people to do. And yet there's something terrifying about the term, just show up. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, then what? I think people freeze when they all of a sudden they realize maybe it's just going to be silence.
Yes. And you know, I love that you said that also, because we need to be comfortable with silence. Silence is okay. It isn't our enemy. We're terrified. It's like, oh my gosh, no one's saying anything. It's okay to just sit with someone in the mud, in their grief, in the trenches of darkness, just sitting there. That is just showing up. Sometimes that's all they need.
Absolutely. And knowing, I say, try and put yourself in their place in those moments of silence. Is that all they need? And sometimes that is it. I find sometimes just breathing in unison is helpful. And
beautiful.
Trying to match their breathing with my body language work and in my other world, my corporate communications world. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, you can find energetic shifts with people if you match their breathing. Say they're breathing high and rapid because they're in some stage of fight or flight. If I start breathing there and then I just continue to, over a period of time, just slow my breathing down to be deeper, more meditative type of breathing, we'll begin to notice just a shift in everybody's place in everybody's energy by just mindfully one person saying, okay, silence is the best here, but the thing I can do is manage my breathing and continue to slow it down to be a more meditative type breathing, a more energetically filled breathing, not a panic.
Yes, that's beautiful. It's and by doing that, you can shift the energy in the room.
Absolutely. The idea of mirroring and matching is powerful, and it gives my brain something to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sitting there panicked, like, should I be talking? Should I say something? What should I say? No, I've got a mission. I've got a mission to bring everybody's breathing down to a place where they're getting enough oxygen to their brain.
Yes.
And that they can be
better. Sharon, I might have to steal that, but I'll let
steal
people
it.
Know.
Steal it away.
I'll let people know I learned it from you. That's so extraordinary, because that's true. When you're sitting in silence, you and like people like me who can't sit still, what a wonderful thing to focus on and just, okay, you can just breathe more intentionally and yeah, with that intention of bringing, connecting people. True.
Connecting people through breath, a very old yoga practice that works amazingly, regardless of whether it's a period of grief or a period of conflict.
Yes, so. I love that. That's wonderful. Great advice. Thank you.
Let's dive into some more things about the, let's say that first shock is passed. We've made it through that first shock. Maybe, like you said, might have been a little messy, whatever, but we've made it through that first shock. Mm-hmm. What have you found that is supportive for people? Maybe when do they get to that place where I'm fine? Yet something about the way they answer, you're like, sure. I'm not so sure they're fine.
I think what you're talking about is the polite conversation. Hi, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. Okay, great. If you need anything, let me know. Okay, thank you. One of my missions is to eliminate the polite conversation because really, most of the time, that's what people want to hear. I'm fine. It's like, oh, phew, thank goodness. I checked in. They said they're fine. I did my bit. And it's funny because, I mean, so people see me and they're like, oh, gosh, here comes Yvonne. She's going to make someone cry because she refuses to stop at the polite conversation. So when someone says, I'm fine, and, you know, 30 years of nursing and becoming more intuitive, I say, no, really. Can you share the truth? I know you'd like to just say you're fine, but how are you really? And I'm listening. And I'm just allowing that again. Now we can sit in silence and do our breathing. People want to tell their stories. And I think that was a really big life-changing thing for me, because as I was sitting here in this very spot when I decided to write a book, I sent out one email and I said, I want to hear from people. I want to hear from people who are experts, patients, clients, whoever, who have been in the deep trenches of grief, now enjoying their lives again. I want to hear. And I just remember sitting here saying, I don't know if anyone will respond. And 5 years later, this is now, the stories haven't stopped coming. So in my book, I interviewed people ages 11 to 101. On my radio show and in my television show, I interview people who have hard journeys. People want to tell their story. We're just conditioned to give that polite, I'm fine response, right? Because most of the time people, they really don't want to hear. They're thinking like, oh geez, I hope she just says she's fine. But as we become more and more open to just showing up and saying, no, really, I want to hear how you're doing, really, that will allow us to be more open, and that will allow, people will realize how incredibly rewarding it is to be invited into someone's circle when they're having a hard time in their lives. I just actually interviewed someone yesterday named Patty for my I Just Showed Up radio show, and Patty is in the midst of placing her husband in a nursing home, and he's 57.
Wow.
And she called me in the morning and she said, you know, I don't know if I can do it today. I'm having a hard day. This is a hard day. I mean, he was diagnosed 4 years ago. So this, I mean, he's my age. So this is a hard journey, needless to say. And I said to her, Patty, if you are okay to come on the show, I don't care if we cry. I don't care if we're messy. You have an important story to share, and I will just show up for you. I will hug you, and we will have some good moments and some hard moments. Let's just do it. And I know that many people she talks to, they're hoping she just says everything's fine. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that. Things are not fine. And like, she is right in the midst of this hardship. She's waiting for a call from a nursing home for her young husband. I mean, she is in the trenches of grief. And I said, let's just talk about this. So what I say, I want to share with everyone, if you are not fine, be okay with saying I'm not fine. And let people know you just need them to listen. It's not their job to fix it. And if you make someone uncomfortable, that's okay. It's good for them. It's good for them, right? It's okay. You don't have to fix it, but I'm going to tell you the truth. I'm not fine. This is really hard. And so again, it works both ways. We need to have the courage to not just say we're fine, because we are actually giving someone the opportunity to just show up for us, right?
And part of just showing up, that I love that you said, we don't have to fix it. And also, I want to reiterate, we don't have to tell our story that matches it.
Oh,
and the other part, though, is also staying present and noticing where they are in their story. Are they in the midst of living this story, which in this case, they probably are, or have they moved past it? Sometimes we're reliving or we're retelling the story. And those are two entirely different places that we would approach
yes.
the additional conversation with, that are they, as they begin to tell me, are they reliving what just happened? Or even sometimes people relive things that happened decades ago. So it's important
yes.
to listen from that place in your heart that goes, there's a lot of emotion still attached to this story. I can feel like they've almost energetically put themselves back in that situation or in the current situation in such a place that they're speaking from emotion mm-hmm. instead of this place of just retelling the story. Because I think of how many times I'm past the diagnosis story now, and being on the radio show, I've told the diagnosis story, I don't know how many times, right? So I've gotten past that place of reliving the trauma of being told your life's different now mm-hmm. to that place of it's just a retelling story. So put your listening ears on and with your heart on there, as understanding where they are
mm-hmm.
in that healing journey of the story.
Yeah. And I think that a little piece of advice I would give anyone is when someone, you're not sure, you know, if they're in crisis or where they are in their journey, when you know it's still a hard time, like with my friend Patty, when you say, how are you? You know, it's awful overall. So I just say, how are you today? How are things today?
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because I know this is a hard journey. How are things today? And then maybe today is a good day. And then you say, how wonderful that today's a good day. Let's go get some ice cream. Or they say, today's an awful day. Then I'm going to sit here and listen. Right? Because asking how things are today, adding that word just says, I know overall this is a hard journey. And the other piece is that, like what you're talking about, sometimes people can share their story again. And sometimes I tell people that we can have a grief attack 10 years down the road, 15 years down the road, whatever. And you can feel like you're right back in it. Like one lady who said her son died 10 years ago. And she said, it's incredible that this year on his birthday was one of the hardest years. I don't know if it's because it's a decade. I don't know. But I really fell apart. And we don't need to fix that either. We just need to allow space for that, right? No one needs to hear, why are you crying? That was so long ago. Never say that, by the way, ever to anybody. Thank you very much. Because grief is grief, right? And people, we all grieve differently. We all have a different process. And we just have to acknowledge and allow it. And I mean, if we're concerned with someone who is, you know, they aren't functioning in their lives, and then we reach out for help, and that's a different story. But for someone to say, I'm really sad today, it's an anniversary, it's a whatever, I'm just having a hard day, it's okay, just again, to not try to fix it, not try to minimize it, not try to say, well, at least, try to not start any sentences with at least, right? At least you're still alive. At least you're, right? Like, no one... If things start with at least, it's already a little red flag, like, oh, this is probably not going to end well. Nobody wants to be at least, you know, they're in a better place. You can say that, or you can say, at least I'm still living, at least I can still walk and talk, but you'd want to hear that from someone else.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. One of the things a previous guest, Sarah Payton, shared with me, and I'm just feeling compelled, like, she didn't put it in this context, but I think it would be a wonderful starter when someone's telling me, I don't know why it's been 10 years, I'm falling apart, that type of story. Sarah always talks about when we're self-talk to our little child that we begin with some phrases similar to like, no wonder, No wonder you're feeling that way. And there was something very acknowledging that I wanted to share in this conversation. I think if I was in that frame of down the road where people are like, you should be over it by now.
Yeah.
If someone started with, well, it no wonder, it makes perfect sense.
How validating, right? How validating is that? That's beautiful. I love that because, yeah, no wonder you're crying. This is hard.
It is hard.
Or tell me more about that. No wonder. I'd love to hear more. And people get afraid. And it's in chronic illness, certainly, because I spoke in November for the Huntington Society of Canada, mm-hmm. which Huntington's, for those who don't know, is a very challenging disease. Many, many years of debilitation. And it was terrifying because I so wanted to share such an important message. It was wonderful because I was vulnerable and I got choked up and I just went around and hugged people and I wasn't trying to fix it. And I knew, I mean, you can't fix this, but I made a promise. I said, but I'm willing to be here, to be present, to just show up for you. And I meant that. And I continue to do that. And again, you know, there's just in chronic illness and long-term illness, it is hard to just show up sometimes. Absolutely. That's where we need our village, right? We need our community. We need everyone to be a part of this. And for no one should suffer in silence and of silos of silence and loneliness and isolation. There's enough people in this world, you know, that we live so far away from often from our family, from our friends. So get to know your neighbors a little bit more, you know, have your radar out. And we did that as I was sharing my message. I realized that, you know, I kind of looked around and I opened my eyes and I thought, you know, I could have a neighbor who has a chronic illness or who is dying and lonely and I don't even know. And that just really shook me. You know, here I am saying it takes a village and let's all just show up for each other. And so I started to pay more attention and lo and behold, right across the street, a neighbor was diagnosed and it was a 2-year process and his wife read my book and we had little chats on the road and I realized that she didn't have a lot of support because everyone lived far away. And my husband Jordy and I ended up being present when her husband died and supported her through that process. And it was incredible. It was hard. And there were tears. And there were hugs. And I feel so honored to have been a part of that journey. And again, that's what people, yes, there are hard journeys. But when you go in there and you make a difference for someone, you get much more than you give. Like I tell people, I say, I'm a do-gooder. I don't even think it's because I'm a good person. It just makes me feel so good. Right? Like it does. When you avoid those situations, you feel awful. That person's isolated. Let's just put down the barriers and just get in there. Life is messy, but we can do so much better when we connect.
It's so important that you say that because so many times I think there's value in things like social media and value in things like our podcast for sure, because people can find out they're not alone.
Yes.
But there's also this isolating aspect of people always just texting each other on their phone. And that physical presence is so profound in helping people feel connected both ways, the person yes. who's grieving and the person who's there to support.
Wow. Yes.
We need to take one quick commercial break, our last commercial break, and we'll be right back and we'll find out some more. We'll be right back.
Your conscious lifestyle on steroids. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the OM Times Experts program. With OM Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Research shows we apologize up to 10 times a day, and most of the time, we say sorry as a response to someone else's mistake. What if we thanked people instead of all that unnecessary apologizing? So instead of saying, sorry, I'm rambling, you say, thank you for listening. Join us at projectforgive.com, a free non-religious resource on global forgiveness.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Autoimmune Hour. I'm Sharon Saylor from SharonSaylor.com. And tonight we're talking with Yvonne Heath. And she was, or is, I guess I should say, a registered nurse. And she had spent the better part of her life working in areas including emergency, intensive care, chemotherapy, and hospice. She's seen a lot of tragedy, a lot of trauma, and a lot of grief. She's written a wonderful book, Love Your Life to Death. As you heard in the last commercial break, I quickly skimmed over that title and misread it, but it's called Love Your Life to Death. She has an awesome TED Talk. Check it out on TED YouTube. It's Transforming Grief Just by Showing Up. And we've been sharing about this idea of showing up. Can feel messy, can feel a little strange. And I wanted to circle back about sometimes in autoimmune, people are stable and it's great. And then other times it's a long, slow progression, which can be very hard for people to show up in your world on and see someone that they really care about the next time they see them being in a different place of wellness. Trying to be the supportive person with someone who has something that, you know, the ultimate outcome is going to be not what you hope for. What suggestions do you have as you deal through that process when you both know that this is not going to end the way either of you want? And yet I find it very hard to be able to be present in those moments when I know that, gosh, the ending isn't what I want.
I have the answer.
Awesome. I've been struggling with that.
Acknowledge and allow all feelings, yours and theirs, and to be open to walking into a situation where somebody perhaps is they're physically declining and it is hard to see. I have watched people physically decline, lose weight, lose mobility. It's excruciating. And to be able to sit in that and to say, I am falling apart because I don't want you to die. I can make myself cry right now. It's hilarious. I always say to people, just so you know, I'll probably make myself cry and one other person. But to be able to get to that raw honesty and the person saying, I don't want to die either. And just like, I am incredibly sad and I'm angry and allowing all of it. And then it's like, that's not what I want, but we have a choice right now because you are still living. You are still alive right now. What can we do with the time you have left to make it the very best that it can be? And sometimes it's the most wonderful. In my book, I wrote, there is opportunity in the dying process. And there is opportunity in the dying process because I have witnessed it. Well, just think of people who die suddenly, mm-hmm. Right? There's no, oh my goodness, I wanted to tell Uncle Joe how much he meant to me. And so when we have, if we can reframe it and say, I would not choose this, you would not choose this, but the choice we have is to make the most of the time you have left. And it is hard and say, Like sometimes I am going to walk in here and cry. We feel like we have to be strong, right? And say, okay, smile. I was at a funeral recently, and this poor mom was, as her daughter was crying that her dad died, she's like, oh, don't cry, don't cry. I'm thinking, heck, ball your eyes out. This is really sad, right? So if we can be in there and allow those feelings to just come out, and then, okay, what can we do now? And I mean, I've heard like some people say, what would mean the most for you right now? It's like, I want some ice cream, and I want chocolate ice cream, and I want it now. And it's like, oh my goodness, coming right up. I'm going to get the ice cream. I want the dog here. I want the cat here. I want, you know, let's do something. I want to get out of this room. Let's wheel this baby outside. Like, we have those opportunities. And again, I say, we always have a choice. We don't always have the choice we wish we had.
Right.
We don't always have the choice we wish we had. And it's hard. And like, easier said than done. Absolutely. Everything I talk about is everything you, right? There's so much that's easier said than done. But if we can acknowledge and allow all those feelings and get them out of the way and not pretend that we are fine when we're not, and they don't have to try to be strong for you because, you know, they don't want you to fall apart. Let's just fall apart, and then let's just get in there and live our best lives as long as we can. I think that's the best that we can do.
Great advice. Much appreciated. Because with autoimmune, there are people that are stable and are able to manage it. And then there are, unfortunately, others where the prognosis, the long-term prognosis is very, 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 very poor.
And unpredictable too, right? You're not really sure. And that's also where I say to have those hard conversations about end of life planning and all of those, to get them out of the way, ideally before diagnosis, but as soon as possible so that we can just live our best lives instead of waiting until someone is closer to end of life and then just saying, you know, things are getting, we're getting closer here. We should have those conversations. That's an awful time to have those conversations. It really is. And I always encourage people to say, don't wait till you feel like talking about it. I mean, you don't wake up Saturday morning and say, you know, I'm going to have some coffee and some muffins, and this is a great day to do our end of life planning. I mean, like that just doesn't, it doesn't happen, right? I feel like every young adult should do end of life planning, and then we should just update it as we go along so that in chronic illness, in long-term illness, and at end of life, we've already done all that. So then we can just get to showing up for each other and living as fully as possible with what we have in this present moment. So that's another thing I truly encourage people. Don't shy away from those conversations because someone has a diagnosis. Those conversations are going to be had, have to be had eventually. Get them out of the way.
Yeah, it's a great point. And I was reflecting on an elderly family member of mine who was recently asking people what they wanted and or selling items and, as they called, minimizing, simplifying their life. And it was interesting to me. At first, I was very emotionally upset by the whole thing, sort of righteous indignation. How dare you? How dare you consider leaving?
I had
to rein myself in and say, this isn't about me. This is what makes them comfortable. And we had an interesting conversation. I told them, I said, this is very uncomfortable for me. This is the idea that, you know, you're asking me, is there something there that is going to get my name tagged on it? And as well as taking them to different places where they could put up for auction a valuable thing or whatever they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
But what was fascinating to me is through that process of helping this elderly family member go through this process, and they're still in the process. They're healthy and everything. This is just something
that's
they wanted
to
do.
It.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Their comment to me was they had waited when their parents passed away and other family members passed away. And nothing was worse to that family member than going to that vacant house and trying to figure it out.
We need a whole other hour for this conversation, Sharon, because what happens also is that everybody knows that there are times when families are fractured beyond repair because if there's one ring, I mean, my cute ring here, if there's three children that want it and nobody knows, right? It's not, they haven't had the conversation about who is going to get the ring and why. They're not speaking to each other ever again. And it's interesting that you were uncomfortable with it, and good for you for acknowledging that. So interestingly enough, my mother and I, we do this on an ongoing basis. And my daughter has actually gone, because the twins, like Tyler's 25, but the twins who are now 14, Jaden and Tanner, they were at home when I was writing my book, Love Your Life to Death. And they are part of, they're in the book, they are part of it. So we have normalized conversations about life, grief, and death. So my mom, a few years ago, started writing down names on all the trinkets. And I remember my daughter was at her house and said, Grandma, do you think when you go to hospice that I could have this, please? Right? Like, and my mom's not sick. She's just saying, at that time. And my mom kind of went, well, geez, I'm not going for a while, I hope. And we all started laughing, right? But we continue to have these conversations. And, well, I wrote in the book about how my mom wanted to give me the ugly picture. Remember, it was like, she was all excited. She wrote, she said, I'm going to give you this picture. And I went, oh God, Mom, it's so ugly. And we laughed for 15 minutes. I said, give that to my sister, Rachel. And so someday when that ugly picture is hanging in Rachel's house, I'm going to laugh I'll be laughing again, because it has to be done at some point. So why not do it together? And you could say to your relative, thank you so much. This is so meaningful to me, right? It's reframing it. Death is a natural part of this journey. Well, I say to people, you don't want to live forever. Can you imagine? I mean, really? Said, how long you been married? Oh, 499 years. I mean, my goodness. Like, our job is to live our best lives and then pass the baton. And that's another thing, is figuring out what you believe about life and death that can create ease and comfort for you, right? Some people believe in reincarnation. Some people have a religious belief. What do you believe that can help you navigate through life, grief, and death? It's so important to think about before you're facing it.
It comes right to my mind of a friend's family member who was, I'll say, left the religion, mm-hmm. and yet did not write down. Most of us knew that they wouldn't have wanted a service in that particular arena, but when the person passed away, unfortunately other family members thought that was best. And I still remember my uncomfortable attending to honor my friend, and yet still going, I know they wouldn't want to be here. They'd want to be having a party or in the park, or they'd want to be doing something else. So please write that down.
Yeah, that is really sad. Oh yes, so I say I want to have a potluck, and I want everyone laughing and crying and telling everybody how funny and wonderful I was. That's my You better cry. I mean, I want everyone hugging and crying. Don't just, I say we have to allow all the feelings, right? I love celebration of life, and that's wonderful, but we have to allow the grief too. It's a roller coaster, right? It's not all joy or grief. You can have laughter and tears and back and forth. This journey, if we allow all our feelings and just learn how to just show up for ourselves, just show up for others, we can eliminate grief, because sometimes that is the price of living and loving. But we can eliminate the excessive and needless suffering we create.
Fantastic. And we have to close on that, everyone. Yvonne, tell us where we can find your book and find out more about you. We're just about out of time. This has been awesome.
Thank you so much. Loveyourlifetodeath.com. Feel free to follow. We have so much exciting stuff coming up, so I encourage you to follow us. And certainly have a look at my TED Talk. It's on the website as well.
Everyone, that was Yvonne Heath, author of the book, Love Your Life to Death. Thank you so much, Yvonne. It was awesome. Really topics we need to approach and talk about, not just around autoimmune, as you guys heard, but in all areas of our life. Just imagine how that could be so helpful in all areas of our life. Everyone, have a great week, whatever your adventures. Join me over on Facebook at Understanding Autoimmune. It's our feel good good thoughts, all sorts of things, keeping a positive outlook page over there at Understanding Autoimmune on Facebook. Join me there as well. Enjoy.
The information provided on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, including the websites understandingautoimmune.com and lifeinterruptedradio.com, plus social media, is for educational purposes only. What you read, hear, and see on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio, and its websites and other media outlets, is based on experience only. The information should never be used for any legal, diagnostic, or treatment purposes. Always seek sound legal, medical, and or professional advice regarding any problems, conditions, and any of the recommendations you see, hear, or read here on the Autoimmune Hour, Understanding Autoimmune, and Life Interrupted Radio.
Find a nice, comfortable spot. Moving about all the little nooks and crannies to get comfortable. Shaking your fingers and wiggling your toes. Just letting it all go. Taking some nice deep breaths and extending your exhale. That's right. Take a moment to savor the colors, the smells, looking all around you. Breathing deep, ponder the word love. What are the first things that wander through your mind when you hear the word love? Begin to think about ways to extend love, full of love to bring out into the world. Taking some nice deep breaths, eyes wide open, and ready to start again. That's right. Welcome back.